Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees, and tonight's show is, as promised, a special women's edition. When people talk about bike racing, mostly they think of the Tour de France, Lance Armstrong, or worse, doping. That is the unfortunate reality with the extent and speed of today's media mania. But there is a breath of fresh air in cycling and a story that is not only hopeful but unfolding in rapid fashion to become headline news on an almost daily basis now, and that's women's cycling. In every discipline, road, track, cross, mountain, and crit, women from all over the world are competing at breathtaking levels. Many, if not most of us who watched the 2012 London Olympics, were pretty certain that it was women's cycling that was the star on two wheels. So this evening, I've asked a group of women professional cyclists, some who are currently racing and some retired from racing, but who are still involved in the sport, to talk with me about their experiences in the world of professional cycling. With me tonight are two women with whom I've spoken in the past, both amazing champions in their day, Inga Thompson and Karen Bliss. Inga is a three-time Olympian, a past national champion, and an outspoken critic of doping in the peloton. In fact, she retired early because of her commitment to clean racing. Karen was at one point in her 15-year racing career called the winningest cyclist in North America and now works with Advanced Sports and Fuji to promote cycling on all levels with an aspiration to help grow women's cycling. In addition, I have with me three women who are currently racing and winning worldwide. New Zealander Joanne, or Jo K, her surname is Kiesnowski, so we call her Jo K, is a three-time Olympian with a slew of titles under her helmet. She currently lives in Colorado racing for Team Tipco, as well as continuing her education through Massey College in New Zealand in Japanese and German. Meredith Miller has spent the last 8 years racing for U.S.-based teams such as the hugely successful Team Lipton, and that's spelled T-E-A-M, Lipton, Aaron's Pro Cycling, and Team Tibco. She grew up in Alabama, moved north with her family, and when the opportunities for soccer didn't work out in college, turned to bike racing. She's raced all over the world and has settled in Colorado. Meredith is Team Tibco's captain for the fourth year. And last, but of course not least, is Amber Pierce. Amber, who lives and races out of Graz, Austria, is originally from Berkeley, California. She began her career as a swimmer, breaking state and national records while still in high school. She then joined the Stanford cycling team, and the rest is history. Amber has a BA in human biology and an MS in earth systems from Stanford, and she currently races for Team Diadora Pastazara. I'm also especially grateful to Malay Galvez for assisting me in rounding up these talented and interesting women for this show. I hope you enjoy it. Ladies, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. So I'd like to begin by introducing each of you. Please tell us your name, where you're from, if you're currently racing and belong to a team, which team. If you're not currently racing, tell us what you're doing now and give us a couple of your past results. We're going to go around the group and we're going to start with Karen Bliss.
Hi, I'm Karen Bliss. I am currently in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I was a professional racer for 15 years, way back in the 80s and 90s. U.S. champion 7 times, world championship team member, raced at the top level, and I am currently the vice president of marketing for Fuji Bikes.
Wow. Okay, then. And Inga Thompson.
I currently live in Halfway, Oregon. And I own and operate a cattle ranch, and my past history with cycling was I've been on 3 Olympic teams and 12 world teams, and I think I have 7 national championships and 3 world medals. Was on 7-Eleven for 5 years on the women's team, and I think the most important is that I got to compete in 2 of the women's Tour de France Feminines, where we got to compete on the same course as the men's.
Wow, very cool. Amber.
Hi, I'm Amber Pierce. I'm currently calling in from Graz, Austria, and I am a current professional racer with the team Diadora Pastazara.
Oh, and that's all you have to say right now? I know, Amber, you have a lot to say. We've already sort of had conversations. Okay, that's good for now. Meredith.
Hi, I'm Meredith Miller. I live in Boulder, Colorado. And I have been racing on the road for the last 15 years and just recently announced my retirement from road racing. I do have one more race that I'll do this year, a Criterium in Fort Collins, Colorado. And I'm not done with the bike yet because I will be racing a full season of cyclocross starting in September. And I've been racing cross. This would be my sixth season. So I still have a lot to do yet on the bike. I'm not quite done yet.
Okay. Well, then, and I think we have one more. Joe?
Hi there. I'm from New Zealand, but I'm calling in from Seattle, Washington. So I live here most of the time. And I race for Team TIBCO, and I've actually raced for them for 6 years now. And I'm a three-time Olympian for New Zealand and eight-time, I think, national champion in New Zealand.
So you can hear these are the most accomplished women, and still so much is going on right now. So let's go back around one more time, and there are a couple of things I'd like to know from each of you, and that is how many events and which disciplines you usually race or did race, and how you juggle training, racing, family, or all of the things that women are going to want to know if they want to get into cycling. And we might as well just go back in order. Karen, tell me about the number of events and what discipline you raced and how you juggle working and training and all that other stuff when you did.
I raced quite a bit. I raced probably around 100 races a year, and that includes track and road. Those are my two disciplines. So like on the track, you know, you can race three races a night, and I count every single one of those. So that's why it sounds like a lot of races. I'm not sure if that's still the same these days with the people that race now, but that was, you know, it was better than training. Racing was better than training. So I used to race a lot.
And how did you juggle, you know, racing with, or is that all you did? Did you not have like family obligations and that kind of thing?
No, I think, you know, everyone has a family, and if not a family, then a support network that you, you know, you need to balance that because you need them, I think, to be a successful racer. So, you know, I was married, I have a family, you know, it's just, it's hard to do, of course, but you have to do it. So, yeah.
Okay. Inga?
When I was racing, I absolutely dedicated myself to nothing but racing. And, you know, when I have people make comments, oh, well, you know, that was a really glamorous lifestyle, I was like, no, actually it wasn't. We never partied. We never played. We didn't go for walks. We didn't go for runs. We didn't go hiking. We lived, eat, and breathed training. That's all I did. And it was either traveling to races to race, and with Karen, where it was like the best training in the world is to race. And so I would race with the men all of the time. If there wasn't like a national category women's race, I would race with the men because you could just get pushed, you know, to the utmost extreme level. And I tried not to put work into it. You just kind of learned how to live off of next to nothing. And just, for me, it was a full-time job that I wanted to be the best in the world. And it meant that I didn't incorporate anything else into it. I didn't date. I didn't play. I didn't drink. I didn't, you know, I just trained and I raced.
Well, boring you. Just kidding.
No, it was
just
boring.
Kidding. Just kidding. All right, Amber, you are still racing. You have decided to move to Austria. Tell us a little bit about the disciplines you race and how you are juggling racing, training, family, and all of that.
I race only on the road, so I'm completely focused on road racing as a discipline. And when I first started cycling competitively, I was still in graduate school, and that was really difficult to balance school and cycling because every time I went to a race, I'd think, geez, if I didn't have all this homework to do, I could race a lot better. And then every time I'd go have a test, I'd think, geez, if I didn't have to train so much, I'd be able to do better in these exams. so that was tough, and that helped me make the decision, though, that once I graduated, I wanted to give cycling 100% focus, and I've done that for the last few years. And it is, even when you commit yourself 100% to something, it, you know, there are, like Karen was saying, like Inga was saying, you have a support network, you do have family, you really cannot do this sport alone. It's not possible. So even when you are 100% focused on that, you have to continually be investing in those relationships that are so important. And not only for the sport and for the support that you need for the sport, but also because those are the relationships that are going to make your whole quality of life and your whole life, you know, worth living on down the road, above and beyond the sport. So that's all important, and you can't forget that. At the same time, the people that are most important to you are going to understand how important cycling and how important sport is to you as an athlete. And that helps a lot in maintaining that balance, because I think you get a lot of understanding from those people when you're on the road and you're maybe cut off because you don't have internet access. And it's definitely not an easy balance in any case. Being overseas has been a little bit tougher because I'm a little bit further away from family, but thankfully we have Skype now, and that makes things a whole lot easier than I'm sure they were many years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and what you didn't say is that you have a bachelor's degree and you have a master's degree. You are well educated, and yet somehow cycling drew you into it hook, line, and sinker. Or we could use bicycle terms, but we won't. So let's move on. Let's move on to Meredith right now. And Meredith, tell me your disciplines and then how you juggle all of the things you need to juggle. Now, you did say you are going to retire this year, which is news to me.
Yes. So I started racing 15 years ago, and I didn't start racing until after I graduated from undergrad at the University of Wisconsin. And so at the time, I wasn't too focused on studies, you know, had a part-time job and whatever. But then from Wisconsin, moved out to California, where I did start grad school, and also moving to California, where the caliber of racing is higher, started getting more involved with racing, and had a difficult time finding a balance between my racing and my, you know, writing my thesis. And I was going off to races on the weekends instead of, you know, being home writing my thesis. And it just so happened that I defended my thesis the day before my husband at the time and I moved to Denmark. So I just barely got that out of the way, because I definitely let cycling, you know, start to infiltrate my life. And then when I moved over to Denmark, or when we moved to Denmark, that's when I started racing full time. And that was in 2003. And that part of that was because I didn't speak a language, Danish, I didn't speak the language there. So I didn't, it was difficult for me to find a job there. And I also just happened to coincidentally move at the time when a professional women's team was starting. And so it worked out. The timing was just perfect. And ever since then, I've been racing full time, you know, with some other jobs on the side here and there. But, you know, racing, road racing, you know, about 75 races a year at the high end. And then, and that's always been, or the last 5 years has been with Team TIBCO. And then 5 years ago when I started racing cross with Cal Giant Berry Farms, you know, that adds, you know, another 4 months of racing to the schedule. So I'm pretty much racing year round and easily doing 100, you know, races a year. And so it definitely takes a toll on relationships and friendships, but, you know, like everyone has said, you count on those support people that you have in your life to understand what you're doing. And I have to say, after racing for 15 years, some people are like, are you going to stop yet? Come on. You know, they don't want me to have to cancel plans all the time anymore. But and that's part of why I've, you know, decided that it's time to retire, because there are things that I don't want to sacrifice anymore. I don't want to give up anymore. I still have an incredible passion for the bike and for, you know, the racing side of things, but I'm almost 40, so it's time to move on. But I've definitely appreciated all the people in my life who have been there to support me over all the 15 years that I've been racing, and have been incredibly understanding and encouraging the whole way. I couldn't have done it, you know, without all those people.
Sure. Okay. And last but not least, Joanne, I want to hear you talk because I love your accent.
I race both road and track, although this year I've just focused on the road. So, and I haven't, you know, necessarily counted up all the races, but I'm guessing I'll be similar to Meredith and Karen, something along the lines of 75 to 100. You know, there's a lot of road racing going on, and I was the same as Inga. I would race a lot with the men, and I still do actually, over here in the States and back in New Zealand. It's great training. And then with the track, you know, you're racing, you know, a lot of races every night sometimes, and sometimes you do a track carnival, and so you might do 10 races, you know, there as well. So it's, you know, it's a lot of racing, but it's, you know, ultimately it's fun, and that's why I do it, is because I'm still having fun. So, you know, until that time comes when I don't enjoy it, then that's when I'll think about retiring. So, but, you know, my family has been always so supportive of everything that I've done, and I started cycling when I was 15, 16. So my parents were, you know, super supportive, and I came over to the States when I was 20. And yeah, they just supported me all the way, and I just came over by myself and ended up getting on a pro team a couple of years later. And my mum always said when I was 15, 16 starting out that I always said I wanted to be on a pro team in the USA. And so I don't really know why I said that, or I didn't know much about it, but it ended up coming true. And yeah, I've been doing it ever since. And yeah, my husband is also really supportive. He used to be a pro racer himself. And so he knows, you know, all that goes along with it, all the traveling, all the time being away. So he's really understanding of that. And but, you know, it is good to have a sense of normalcy, I guess, with all the training and racing and being away that we do. So it is nice to, you know, connect with all your friends and family when you are at home, and you know, do normal things outside of cycling, and yeah, try to have that as well in your life.
I want to take a moment to remind our listeners we are speaking with five pro women racers: Karen Bliss, Meredith Miller, Amber Pierce, Inga Thompson, and Joanne Kiznowski. So I want to move on to some of the real nitty-gritty questions that a lot of people are asking about women's cycling right now. People think women's cycling should be better covered, should be more been pay. You know, we have a pay situation, an equity situation in pay. There are a lot of things like that. I want to go back for a moment to Karen and Inga and ask you about how it was different when you were racing before you retired in terms of the quality of the races, the quality of the sponsorship, the pay, and what you felt was equitable compared to maybe what the men were doing. And Inga, I know you're going to have to leave us soon, so I'm going to ask you to do that first.
From what I have observed over the years, it really seems to me like the women's cycling has gone somewhat backwards. You know, I can't remember who I was reading an article where they said that they were really surprised that they got interviewed. And that just that stunned me, because it seems like we were constantly doing TV interviews. When I was racing, we had a women's Tour de France Féminine where we raced on the same courses as the men. You know, granted, we started up the road maybe, you know, 20 to 40 miles, whatever was appropriate. And so our races were shorter, but we also had half the horsepower. You know, we had 120 men in the field versus, you know, they had a little over 200. But a point that I want to bring out here, that a little known fact that a lot of people don't know, is like in 1986 when I raced it, the overall women's winning time was only 0.6 mph slower than the overall men's winning time. And so you hear this critique, is like, oh, your races were shorter. I'm like, yeah, but we almost had half the horsepower, but we raced at the same speeds. The women can do this. And when I was racing, we had the Women's Tour de France Féminine. It's not there anymore. We had the Coureurs Classic. It's not there. And so, you know, I'm working with Catherine Bertin and a few other people about trying to get the Women's Tour de France back. And we've actually, I've put in a call to Greg LeMond and a few other people, trying to get Emory Sports Organization to, you know, to step up to the plate and try to get them to be visionaries. And, you know, and I'm trying to encourage them by saying, God, do you remember when women couldn't vote? and it seems
right.
Obvious now, but of course women should vote. But think about all of the chaos that happened in order to get the right for women to vote. It was like, oh, they can't do that, they can't this. There was every single excuse in the world. But once women got that right, and we look back in hindsight, it's like, but of course. And then you could draw the same analogy to emancipation with the slaves. But of course these black men should be free. Absolutely, of course. And so I want to draw attention to the fact that the women, and this is what I'm pushing for, is if they want to be on the International Cycling Union calendar or to have points, any race, when they're at that level, they should be able to also put on a women's brace. I mean, you couldn't imagine women's tennis, you know, men's tennis without women's tennis. And so I think that when we get the women in there, it's going to be like, aha, but of course the women should be there. And I'm so sick of this argument, oh, the women can't do that. Well, you know, studies are showing that when it comes to endurance, we actually have better bodies for this. And that, and I'm truly a believer of you build it and they will come, because there's only one reason that I ever joined women's cycling. And this is the one reason. I heard an announcement that there was going to be a women's Tour de France. And I said, that's what I want to do. I didn't have dreams of doing criteriums, you know, in parking lots and stuff like that. You know, when you see the men's Tour de France and they said they're going to have a women's, that's what I wanted to do. And I fully believe that there are the women out there like me that are competitive, we're go-getters, and we want to be there. And so that's the vision that I have for women's sports and where I would like to see it going. So in a really long-winded answer to where do I think women's cycling is at right now, I think it's gone backwards. But I also think enough time has gone forwards that we can start making some of these pushes and these requests, and I don't even want to call it a demand. You know, as we had to demand that women had the right to vote, as blacks, you know, demanded that they could be free, I'm kind of at that point with women's cycling.
Okay, I got it. Karen, how about you? What do you see from today? And you are still involved in an interesting way, in a support way for cycling, as compared to when you were racing. How do you see women cycling today and then?
I would agree with Inga that it's not progressed as much as I would have thought at this point. I think that, you know, it was funny, just last night I was watching some documentary on the runner from 84 Olympics, Mary Decker. Mm-hmm. And there was so much media coverage about her. And that's how I remember it for women's cycling, now that you mentioned that, Inga, because there, you know, we were promoted back then. That's definitely where I see a difference. I see fewer races, although I haven't, you know, I am involved at like a sponsorship level now, working for Fuji. We sponsor some women's teams and other athletes, of course. But still, I think there are probably fewer opportunities for women to race. The prize money is nowhere near what it was before. Salaries, I'm not, you know, I doubt they're, I don't know, I guess they're the same. We never got paid very much back then either. So, I mean, I would have to say it hasn't really grown as much as I would have hoped. Which is sadly the case. I mean, I still see lots of interest. I still see women passionate and involved. And, you know, I still see that there's potential. And I see just recently people paying a lot more attention to the women's side of the sport. But certainly I don't see the money. I don't see the sponsors. I don't, you know, not as much at least as I would have hoped.
So, Amber, let me ask you, what is your perspective hearing both Inga and Karen saying that there were more races, there was better sponsorship, there were better races? What are you finding out there? What keeps you in the sport if these things aren't so for women today?
I think for most of the women, and I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I do think that there's a general feeling in the peloton, at least, that we're all in it for the passion of the sport. I don't think Inga or nor Karen would say that they were in it for the money. And that doesn't hurt. That's a fact.
Sure.
But, you know, just because we're not getting paid a lot doesn't mean that, you know, that we're not going to want to do it. And I think that it's a real testament to how passionate women are about cycling and about racing, that there are so many women still involved, even when we are facing such challenges as we are. And it's actually pretty shocking that we do face these pretty serious, I mean, it's really a civil rights issue of equity here, that we're still arguing these points in this day and age. But I, for me personally, it's about the racing, and it's about the passion of the racing and the sport, and the passion of being an athlete and wanting to become better and reach, you know, it, for me, my own potential. And I think that that's kind of where most of the athletes are drawing most of their motivation. On the other hand, these obstacles are extremely frustrating, and it's sad. It's really sad to hear that things may have, you know, that at this point things are sliding backwards a little bit. I hope that There are a lot of initiatives going on right now that are bringing a lot more attention and awareness to what's happening in women's cycling, and I think that's awesome. And I do hope that that awareness contributes to some forward progress in the coming years. And certainly, you know, I've been involved with a few projects. I've been also working a little bit with Catherine Bertin on her documentary that she's coming out with, which is going to that's called Half the Road, and that'll be coming out and highlighting a lot of these issues that are still ongoing in women's cycling. It's frustrating. It's absolutely frustrating. I do think that we deserve more media attention. We do deserve more prize money, you know, better salaries, all of that. And it all helps to create a positive feedback loop. You know, the more money we have, the more we can pay for media coverage. The more media coverage we get, the more money comes into the sport. Right. And, you know, we can get there. It's just, it's not quite there yet. In the meantime, you have a whole lot of women who love sport, who love cycling, and we're all out there racing no matter what the external conditions are.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk with Meredith about the fact that she's retiring right now and then what her career was like, and take a look at her take on women's cycling. We'll be right back on The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
On Saturday, August 31st, join the American Diabetes Association of Northeast Ohio at Come Walk With Me, a one-mile ADA step-out fun walk starting at 9 a.m. at Cleveland Metro Park's Big Creek Reservation at Snow Road and Big Creek Parkway in Parma. This fun and fundraising event includes snacks, water, and prizes for registered walkers. Meet ADA staff and learn more about their mission. Just look for the red and white tent. To register or learn more, contact Lisa Zaremba at 216-328-9989, extension 6623.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting, so why would you do it while driving? NASCAR driver Casey Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at stoptextstopwrecks.org.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees. We are speaking with a distinguished panel of women professional cyclists, including Karen Bliss, Joanne Kiesnowski, Meredith Miller, Amber Pierce, and Inga Thompson. And we are going to move on over to Meredith and talk to her a little bit about her feelings about women in cycling today and sort of, you know, you're coming to the end of your career. Tell me, Meredith, what is it that you saw over the last few years or from the beginning of your career till now and how things have changed in women's cycling from your perspective?
Right. I'd agree with, you know, Amber and Inga and Karen in that, you know, we definitely haven't progressed as much as we, you know, we'd all like to have seen. I'd say at least we're, you know, kind of been stagnant for a long time, if not taken a slight step backwards. And for over the course of the 15 years for me personally, is in regards to salary, I have, you know, definitely, you know, made a jump up and, you know, and certainly not making a lot of money doing it. I'm still doing it for the passion of, you know, for the sport and everything. And then on the race side of things, I have seen a lot of races come and go. A lot of men's races come without the addition of, you know, the women's races along with them, which has been, you know, really disheartening. And, you know, a lot of the races that are being canceled aren't being replaced with new races for women. I actually was fortunate enough in 2003 to race the women's tour. And that year, man, we had a lot of issues with the courses, with the accommodations. You know, a couple of the stages were canceled or delayed for whatever reasons. And people were fed up with it. And then that's kind of when the last, I don't know, official women's tour happened. And over the years, we've seen other French races come and go that kind of call themselves, you know, the Tour de France Feminine. But yeah, so, and then also on the team side of things, I think we've been really stagnant on, you know, how many teams, women's teams there are at the top level. You know, if I look at the number of teams at the top level today that would consider themselves professional teams, I don't think we're any more, if not fewer, than we had maybe 10 years ago. And so that's the unfortunate part, too, is that each year, you know, there might be a team that comes, a new team that comes forward, but they're replacing another team that's folding. So we're not adding any teams to the mix, you know, or any, at least any top level teams to that mix. And so they're, so then what happens is when women are looking for jobs and they're looking for places on these teams, you know, they have to accept something that's, you know, subpar, you know, a salary that's less than what they hoped for because it's too competitive. You know, there, somebody else is going to take their spot if they don't. And so then, you know, you sort of come become complacent or content with what you get. And that's the unfortunate part is that, you know, we all say that we're in it for the passion of the sport. And that, and I don't think anyone wants to have a job that they're not passionate about. But unfortunately, we've become content with saying that. And that's where I think we get into trouble with, you know, sponsors or organizers, and they think, oh, well, they're just in it for this passion of the sport anyway. They're not here to make money. And so that's kind of, you know, hindered us in a way, I think, of actually making more forward progress and, you know, raising the level of the sport for women.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to say goodbye to Inga for right now. Inga, I wish you could stay for the balance of the show, but we'll get back to you again. I know you have an appointment. Thank you so much for being on the show with us this week.
Can I get in my last 2 cents?
You sure can.
You know, we ran into that when we were cycling too, that there just wasn't any money there. And that was one of the big things that I really, really pushed for. And so it was such a tough balance because I am passionate. You know, between the two, you know, between all of us, actually, I can tell anyone now, I would have raced for free. But that wasn't the point. And I remember arguing with our sponsors, like, you know, when I went to the Tour de France Féminine, we're on the same courses, I get to stand on the podium with Greg LeMond, and I was making like $5,000 a year. And I got third overall, and I won stages. And Andy Hampston got fourth overall, and his salary went from $60,000 a year to, like, you know, $500,000 a year. And I remember just arguing tooth and nail with Jim Okowich saying, but I got third overall. What do you mean my salary is only going to go up to $10,000 a year? I want more. I got coverage. I got sponsorship. And it was interesting how you made enemies and you pissed off the teams, and yet at the same time, You have to ask and you have to demand, and you do make people mad. And I was there for the passion. I loved it. And at the same time, it's like you have to step up to the plate and say, I will race for this and I will demand this. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, that I didn't get what I wanted and how many times that, you know, yeah, you got, you know, fired because you didn't get what you wanted. But still, the point was, is that you have to fight. And, you know, and that whole complacency, I understand it because, you know, some years I made over $100,000 and then, you know, the next year you don't make anything and we're still there. And, you know, and I look back with some of these sponsors and just, you know, demanding the money and kind of going at it as a businesswoman saying, this is the coverage I can get you. I can pull out all of these, you know, all these newspaper clippings. I've already delivered, you know, $500,000 or, you know, whatever the number is in advertising if you had to do this. And so we're in this really tough position of women of demanding. You actually have to demand it. And I don't know exactly what the answer to that is because I'm kind of long-winded, but I don't have enough time here. But I'm still of that mindset of you push and you push and you push and you know you make people mad, and I know that we're there for the love and the passion, but I think you have to ask, and you're going to get told 9/10 of the time. And, you know, and I'd like to, I know my big thing is now that I'm older and wiser, I don't know about wiser, I'm older with more wrinkles, but it really starts, you know, push for women getting more and maybe bringing in the appropriate sponsors.
Well, let's hope that you can do that. And we'll talk again. How's that?
All right.
Okay.
I gotta go.
Thanks. Okay. Bye, Inga.
Thank you. Bye.
So, Joanne, I really want to hear from you because you have a different perspective. You actually have a perspective of having grown up in New Zealand, of having come to the States. You raced, I assume, down in New Zealand. Tell us about what you see for women in cycling worldwide. You have another whole perspective, I think.
Yeah, it is very similar over in New Zealand still.
as it is to here and in Europe. You know, it definitely is, you know, second fiddle to the men cycling. But, yeah, in saying that, like, it's, I agree with all the other girls too. I've been involved for 15 years now, and it seems like, you know, the money that we used to get for prize money 15 years ago is the same, if not even sometimes less, than it is now, you know, and that's 15 years later. So it shouldn't be like that. It should have, you know, grown as the years have gone by. But unfortunately it hasn't. So, you know, what to do about that is, you know, I'm not sure of the correct answer right now, but, you know, hopefully, you know, people can, race promoters can start putting on, you know, races, you know, that, you know, that they race with the guys. They'll put on a women's race alongside that and offer equal prize money. And I know, for example, Philadelphia this year, Karen had a lot to do with that. And that was, I mean, it's one of my favorite races every year. And that just made it even better that we raced with the guys, you know, just we raced before the guys. And we did the same course. And we did do a little shorter. But I believe Karen can tell me here, but I think we got the same prize money as the guys this year. Is that right,
yeah,
Karen?
Yeah, definitely did, yeah. It was equal from start to finish, same number of places, same amount for the sprint and the Queen of the Mountain. So thanks for the shout out.
Yeah, no, exactly. That was just one of the ones that, you know, it comes to mind, like I said, because it's always my favorite race every year. And to have that happen this year, you know, I think it was 13 years after I'd done it the first time. So, you know, that was a really positive step forward that, you know, if race promoters and sponsors can, you know, have that insight, then, you know, maybe we can, you know, we'll get more women racing and just more interest in the sport in general.
Well, I'm going to throw kind of a monkey wrench question out there, and I want to see who salutes it or who throws it into the trash or whatever. Some people will say that women's racing isn't as exciting as men's. Now, we've already determined that the speed is not the issue. I can't imagine watching a Peloton going down the road, what the difference would be. So if a sponsor is looking to come forward and say, well, I want to sponsor men, who, by the way, in my opinion right now, are sort of at the bottom of the heap given all the problems with past doping and everything that's been going on for the last few years. That isn't, at least it's certainly not being talked about if there is doping among the women. Why wouldn't a sponsor step up and say, you know what, maybe we should put our money and our effort and our marketing behind women's cycling because, and you can fill in all the blanks that we just talked about. So who wants to talk about that?
It's Karen. I'm happy to talk to that because I'm in that position of having been a professional racer. But also now on the flip side of it, you know, Fuji is a sponsor.
Right.
And I agree with Inga. I mean, that's how stuff gets done. Jump up and down and, you know, yeah, you're going to piss people off and it's important to demand. I mean, all that stuff makes change. But I think something a little bit more strategic is in order here. And I think that, you know, if any of our racers came back to me as a sponsor and started jumping up and down, you know, I'd say, I get it, you know, but you have to look at it from a business perspective. You have to look at it from my perspective as a business person. I want to invest in women's cycling. I believe in it. You know, it's not any different than men's cycling, you know, when it comes to the dynamics of the race and the passion and all that other stuff. I think the thing that's really lacking and the thing and the reason a lot of sponsors don't get involved is because there's not an organization or a structure that we can glom onto like there is for men's cycling. And that makes a big difference, you know, because for Fuji, I'm here, I work with sponsorship, but that's only like 5% of the things that I do here, right?
Right.
So if somebody's coming to me and asking for sponsorship for a team, you know, I'm like, okay, great. All right. This time of year, we talk about sponsorships and we'll do it. Send me your proposal. What do you got? So you get a proposal, go through it. And it's like, you know, I'm not disparaging anybody. There's some great proposals that come across, but it's really sort of like, all right, great. We sponsor the team. We'll give you bikes. You know, we'll contribute some money. You guys do your own thing. What are you going to do for us in terms of publicity? And it's not, again, I'm not disparaging. It's just the system and the way it is. It's when we sign up with a men's team right now, the way it's set up is, you know, they do the website. They do, you know, they send us photos. They, you know, they make it easy for us to get a return. But with a women's team, we have to do that effort. I don't mean this to sound negative at all, because I've been in the same position. But that's just from my perspective how we're looking at it.
When you say there's structure for men and there isn't structure for women, is there a lack of team support for women? So you have women who race, but then you need team support, team managers, team.
Right, yeah.
Okay, is that what you're saying is missing? Amber, do you have support?
Yeah, I was just waiting to jump in here too, and I agree with everything that Karen is saying, even from an athlete's perspective. This is a business, and even as an athlete, the athletes and the teams have to understand that it is a business, and we have to make the sponsorship worth the money that we're asking the sponsors to invest. And I think a lot of teams don't do that very well, and unfortunately, it's a chicken or the egg problem for the women's teams, because a lot of the men's teams have bigger budgets that allow them to hire somebody who's a full-time media consultant or a full-time PR representative for the team. And that person's full-time job is to make sure that the sponsors have the exposure, the media materials that they need to get the return on their investment. And a lot of the women's teams are operating on much smaller budgets, so these tasks end up falling to other members of the team staff. For example, that the director, you know, the directors are expected to write race reports, to take photos and send photos in, when their job as a director in and of itself is a full-time job. Likewise, a lot of this falls to the athletes. And so what ends up happening on the women's teams is it ends up being kind of a group effort, which is great and maybe contributes some sense of unity, but on the other hand, it's not professionally run, and it's not, you know, necessarily a cohesive, really well organized effort, and that makes a really big difference to the sponsors who are looking to get involved in the sport.
Well, you are actually sponsored by a European team, so is it different? Is that one of the reasons you moved to Austria, so that you could race in sort of under the umbrella of a European team?
It wasn't necessarily to race for a European team per se, but okay. the racing in Europe is different than it is in the U.S. The fields are bigger. It's more international. For example, all the World Cups are raced in Europe. And so part of the reason that I came was for the level of racing. A teammate of mine whose name is Amber Neben, and she's a former world champion, national champion, Olympian. She and I got in a conversation about this the other day, and she made a very excellent point, and it's one that I tend to agree with. Men's racing is boring. You look at some of the men's races, and they're almost 300 kilometers long. And so what ends up happening is for the first 100K, it's very predictable racing. You know that an early breakaway is going to go. You know that all the rest of the teams are going to let that breakaway go, and they're going to let it get however many minutes of a gap. And then eventually the teams that have an interest in, maybe it's a sprinter stage or a sprinter's race, they're going to initiate a chase, and it ends up being very predictable. It's the same racing. It's also long, and there are boring parts in it. The difference is that in the men's racing, you have television coverage that actually lasts long enough to build a story through all of those long, boring kilometers. So you have enough time for the commentators to talk about the racers and the personalities and their stories, and you have enough time to create a story around these seemingly boring events and make it interesting to the fans who are watching to understand the strategy that underlies, well, why would you let an early break go? And why would you let the gap go out to 10 minutes, 20 minutes? And why wouldn't you start chasing until this point? That can become a really interesting story if you tell it right. And that's part of the problem with women's racing is our races are telling, you know, we have the same kinds of stories and equally interesting stories. The problem is that we just don't have anybody who's telling those stories. And I don't think that that argument that men's racing is more exciting than women's racing, I don't think that holds any water. I think the difference is that it's being sold differently, and it's being sold more professionally, in a more organized manner. And I think that that's what's really lacking on the women's side.
And Amber, I just want to jump in here. This is Karen. I totally, totally agree with you. I think that, like Diane asked us earlier, you know, to sort of rank what's the most important thing to get women's cycling moving. And first and foremost, it's promotion. It really is. It's exactly what you said. It's telling these stories, you know, telling the big stories, telling the individual stories. That's really what gets people interested. I mean, every year you watch the tour on TV and it gets so much better because they're learning how to tell the story better. You know, that's exactly what we need. Just get it into the eyes of the public and people are going to fall in love.
This is just awesome. Awesome. Let me remind our listeners again. We are now speaking with just Joanne Meredith, Karen, and Amber. Inga had to split for a meeting or something. She said it was an hour away.
Can I add something to what Amber and Karen were just talking about real
quick?
Yes,
you can. I'll bet this is Meredith.
So yeah, two things. One is I definitely do think that women's teams' budgets make it difficult to make to reach out to their sponsors and tell the story, even just to the sponsors. I have a good friend who works for a world tour team that has both a men's and a women's program based out of Australia. And I see all the work that she does, and she writes all the digital content for the team, for the website. And so every single day after a race, she's on the phone with either riders and or the directors writing a race report. Win, lose, or, you know, draw, whatever. She's writing a race report. And it's because I don't know that sponsors only want to hear the story when it's about a win. Karen, you might be able to tell me something more about that. But, you know, I think they like to hear the story about the riders and the team throughout the, you know, entire season, not just only when the team is winning. And, you know, she also is a liaison with the sponsors and, you know, getting what the sponsors want onto the website and all of that kind of stuff. So I definitely do see the work that goes into it. And it does require a lot of time and manpower and the budget to do that. The second thing is, I want to say, Amber, you were doing an awesome job during Philly of commentating and tweeting. And I'd love to see more of that because did an excellent job telling the story from a woman's perspective about women's racing. And you know the riders, you know, and Kristen Armstrong was doing the same thing during Nationals. And I think that helped a lot, and it definitely drew a lot more interest to those races because you were there telling the story throughout the race, and you were doing exactly what Phil and Paul and, you know, Bob do during the tour, you know, and it was great.
You're in great company.
Well, thanks, you know, Meredith. Yeah, I actually got thrown in Twitter jail for tweeting too much, which was awesome.
I don't even want to know what Twitter jail is, but it sounds like a place I don't want to go. Okay,
it was fantastic, and I'd love to see more of that. I'd love to see more women, you know, step up, and I actually would love to do it myself, is, you know, be there at the races commentating and telling the story.
Well, it sounds to me like you're on your way. Maybe, huh?
This is Amber again. I just want to do a quick comment. During the women's Giro d'Italia this year, that was called the Giro Rosa.
Right.
Again, there's a men's Giro d'Italia that everybody knows about, but not many people know that there's also a women's Giro d'Italia. And I was working with a website that covers women's cycling, and we ended up doing a series of videos. And it was just me with Skype, doing a video commentary after every stage and basically walking people through, okay, here's what actually happened on the stage and here's why things played out like this. You know, here are the tactical decisions that were being made. Here are some of the tactical options people had. This is what they chose to do. And we had great feedback. The fans loved it. I mean, you know, it was basic stuff, but I think, again, it's getting back to telling that story. And just the point I'm trying to make is just that there is an audience for it, and people really do appreciate it, and they respond to it very, very well. And I think that it would be extremely intelligent of sponsors and teams to really tap into that, because it's extremely valuable.
Okay. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I would say the age that we're in now with all the technology, you know, we have to make the most of this technology now, you know, that we didn't have this 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, you know, Twitter and all the live streaming of all the events now. So I feel like we can really make a difference, and we can really bring, you know, women's cycling to the masses, and people can watch it online now. And, you know, like, for example, the US Nationals, obviously I wasn't racing, and so I could watch it online. And just the feedback that everybody was giving about the race, like, oh my gosh, this was the most exciting race ever, and, you know, everybody loved it. And I think the same, I think back to the Olympic road race last year in London. Everybody talked about that, how the women's race was so much more exciting than the men. And I think that was just great for women's cycling. And now, you know, in Britain, for example, they're talking about they're going to have a women's tour of Britain next year, and it's going to offer the same prize money that, you know, Mark Cavendish and Bradley Wiggins would get. And they're promoting that quite big now. So I think, you know, those are really positive moves forward that we can make. And like I said, especially in this day now with all the technology that we have.
You know, I think we are beginning to see a breakthrough for women right now. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to bring this show on. I just believe that, you know, all of us are sitting in a place to watch women's racing suddenly blossom. And I think it's awesome. So we don't have a whole lot of time left. I would like to get an answer from each of you that if you were to give a young woman who might be listening and says, boy, I'd really love to race professionally, what would it be? And let's start with Amber.
You know, I'm a firm believer that if it's really truly your dream and it's really truly in your heart that you want to do it, you should just do it. Women's cycling, especially the women's side. But, you know, the fact is, you know, we've been talking about women's cycling, but the men's side is also fraught with deep-seated problems and frustrations. But I think that for any person of any age, if you have a dream, you just got to go after it, because if you don't, you'll regret it. And you may hit some obstacles along the way. In fact, you most definitely will, no matter what path you choose in life. But at the end of the day, if you can feel satisfied that you were honest with yourself, you were true to yourself, and you really went after what you believed in and what you really wanted to do, then you can take a deep satisfaction in that. And I think that makes the obstacles and the frustrations seem so much less. So I would say go for it.
Meredith, what's your advice to a young woman who might come to you and say, wow, I watched you race and I know you're retiring. I want to race. What is it I should be doing?
I agree with Amber that you just have to say go for it, and that's going to require a lot of time and energy and dedication and support from, you know, friends and family. But I also think that it's a matter of reaching out to friends and to using different resources and creating a network, and not being afraid to ask questions and not being afraid to go out there and mix it up with the guys and get in there with, you know, some races or at least other riders that are stronger than you. You know, it doesn't have to be just guys, but, you know, and to find those people that can push you along the way and they help you find that little extra, you know, 2% that in training is going to make you stronger the next time you go out and race. And, you know, and yeah, really just commit to it and enjoy the ride along the way.
Karen, what do you have to say?
I would say wholeheartedly go for it, just like those guys. I think, you know, when I look back on what I gained versus maybe what I sacrificed, it's not even close. You know, I think I've gone to so many different places I never would have dreamed of going. I've met so many incredible people. I mean, the sport really does attract a really, really unique group of people. You know, listen to all of us. I'm just, you know, articulate and, you know, passionate. And I'm just so fortunate. I feel so lucky to have been involved. You know, I learned so much about myself. I learned so much about, you know, working with other people. I learned discipline and teamwork and goal setting and all those things that I feel sorry for people that don't get to have this type of experience, honestly. And I think it's really helped me in many ways, some that I probably can't even describe. But, you know, I have a great job right now. I think it's because of my experience. I think people are really fascinated by the fact that you are a professional athlete. And I think, you know, for those of us who were in the sport, I think, you know, it's almost like a secret club. And it's such a cool feeling to belong to something that's really sort of, I don't know, it's intense, it's passionate, it's really, really just a really cool feeling. So I would wish that everybody could get to experience something like that.
And Joe, you are the last one to be able to tell us what you would tell somebody who came to you and said, I think I want to start racing a bike. What would you tell her?
Yeah, I would tell them, you know, don't give up on that dream. Just keep going for it. And if that's what you really want to do, you will do it. You know, if you believe that every day, you know, every minute of every day that that's what you want to do, you know, you can push your mind and you can push your body to amazing things. So, yeah, just keep pushing hard and basically push yourself further than you believe that you can go. And, you know, and when you get there, you know, you just have to enjoy it and you really have to make the most of it when you are a pro and be grateful for those, you know, for those opportunities that you've created for yourself by being a professional. And it is an amazing experience, like Karen said, you know, the amount of countries and people from different countries that you get to meet. And it's just incredible. And I just hope that everybody that thinks that they want to be a pro cyclist, you know, they just keep pushing and so that they can have that experience as well. And, you know, you have to commit to being a pro cyclist, like do everything that you can to be the best, you know, like eating right and sleeping enough and training hard and, you know, specific training and doing all your exercises from the PT and getting massages and all that sort of stuff, you know, making sure you've got goals that that push you every day in training, you know, so that when you're going up that steep hill, you can think about what you're training for. Hopefully you can make it.
Well, I cannot tell you how delightful this was. And I know it took a long time to put together. I'm so happy we could have this conversation. Amber, Karen, Meredith, Joanne, thank you so much for being with me on the show this week. I wish you all a lot of luck. I'll see you out there somewhere sometime. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Diane.
Bye-bye. Have a great night.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah.
Bye.
All right,
good night.
Good night. So that's our show on professional women's cycling. I hope you enjoyed it. We were having a lot of fun. It seems like all these women know each other fairly well and are supportive of one another in pretty special ways. So I hope you'll join me next week for the Outspoken Cyclist. Same time, same place. In the meantime, it's nice and cool here. Perfect for riding. I hope you can get in a ride. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.